Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Earlier this month, doctors in London made an astonishing announcement that an HIV-positive patient had been cured of the infection after receiving a bone marrow transplant. Since then, two other individuals who have seemingly been cured have made national headlines. Until this breakthrough becomes widespread for the millions of Americans living with AIDS and HIV, however, advocates say more must be done to promote testing and increased funding for life-saving medications. The South remains home to the largest number of undiagnosed cases of HIV and the most new cases of the disease. News and Views producer Clayton Hinkle recently sat down with Christina Adelike of the NC AIDS Action Network and Marvin Anderson of the Southern AIDS Coalition to talk about the latest healthcare advances and why the South experiences the greatest burden of HIV infection of any region in the U.S.
Well, Christina Adelike and Marvin Anderson, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, there have been several extraordinary stories that have been in the national news recently that have highlighted individuals who have been cured of AIDS. What did you first think when you saw or heard those news stories, and how close are we to coming up with a cure that is widely available?
Well, I was really excited, especially for the patient that was able to receive that diagnosis. But after doing some further research, I found that he was actually in remission, and there are a lot more facts surrounding that. But it did provoke some thought and think. You know, we are in 2019. We have seen a lot of medical advancements that, in effect, could be seen as almost a cure, you know, through the use of PrEP and getting people tested and in treatment and virally suppressed. So it kind of made me think that, you know, even though we may not have a vaccine cure that you can easily purchase, if we were able to spread the information about what we do currently have and actually implement that, how many more, you know, cases like this guy are we going to see?
And specifically, as a person with the lived experience of being HIV positive, who could speak to this testament of, as Christina stated, you know, getting into treatment, being consistent with treatment, being in adherence with treatment, and now one of the pendulums that has swung is that we now have U equals U, which is a national proclamation that has been affirmed by the CDC that if you are on your medication, if you are consistent, then you can become what is called undetectable. And we now know that undetectable equals untransmittable. So I, because I'm adhering to my medications, I am on my meds, I'm healthy, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, I cannot transmit to anyone. And so I'm not a harm or detriment to anyone's health. And so that moves us closer to that level of what we call a cure, or maybe perhaps that's what you were referring to when you said in remission, maybe?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about just looking at the general population. And if we were to combine the use of medication, mm-hmm. making sure people are tested, and like you said, getting virally suppressed, coupled with the use of PrEP,
yes.
For people not living with HIV,
yeah.
Let's say if they're vulnerable to HIV, they can take PrEP, and it's a pill that you can take comparable to birth control. You take it once a day and it literally prevents,
yes.
you know, contracting HIV. So I feel like if you were to combine those two tools together,
yeah.
in effect, you know.
Right. We've won.
Yeah.
and that is the key, is to having that regimen, having access to it, and mm-hmm. then being very disciplined about following the instructions and having that quality care. Let's talk a little bit, though, about the story of HIV and AIDS in the South. We know it is very different than the rest of the country. What do our listeners need to know?
Well, I think they first should know that in the South specifically, that the HIV diagnosis and the numbers drastically show that it's a disproportionately disadvantaged, mm-hmm. specifically with people of color. We make up 20% of the population and we represent over 50% of the diagnosis. And so that's problematic. And so we have to look at all of the intersections that go along with that, in addition to the Southern states just being overwhelmingly affected by HIV and AIDS due to all of the things that feed into that. Right, Christina?
Yeah, there are a lot of different factors that contribute to that, because like Marvin said, HIV disproportionately is found in the South compared to other parts of the country. But when we look at other factors that would contribute to that, like access to healthcare and, you know, comprehensive sex ed and things that would positively contribute to eradicating HIV are not necessarily as present in southern states. If you look at states that have, you know, expanded Medicaid and haven't, you'll see a majority of the states are in the South. And that definitely, for sure, impacts outcomes.
Absolutely. And we know that testing is very important. Let's talk a little bit about the importance of getting tested. And how do you go about reducing the stigma of people actually going to the doctor and saying, hey, I want to get an HIV test?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I go every year, not always by choice for my yearly physical. And
you were tested yesterday, actually, right?
I was tested yesterday, but in my normal interactions with my general practitioner, I've only been asked once.
But you're
life.
Saying that most doctors may not even ask the question.
They may not. They may not. And there are a lot of different reasons why. People may not be comfortable talking about sex with, you know, someone's grandma or whatever. But the reality is it does impact your health. Mm-hmm. And if more people were tested and were aware of their status, that would be a game changer. Because if you don't know, you're not going to do better.
And more importantly, I think, and thank you again for having us today. Number one, as Christina just stated, awareness, right? So we have to get people aware that, first of all, HIV and AIDS is still an issue. Because so many times people think, oh, well, we don't hear about it as much mm-hmm. anymore. It's not just a drastic conversation. And so platforms like this to get the word out is helpful. Secondly, I am actually communications manager with Southern AIDS Coalition, and we partner with this amazing organization, NCAN, here in North Carolina. And one of the things that we are doing through our CBA department, Capacity Building Assistance, is we are actually creating trainings and going into provider communities to help them understand the importance of mentioning it to your patients, mm-hmm. like when they come in, and making that a part of their healthcare landscape. And then thirdly, making sure that individuals understand that if we talk about it, and strengthening advocates like myself or advocates like or allies like Christina to say, we need to have this conversation within our communities to help decrease stigma, because that is a driving force and a shield that keeps people from getting tested. And which is very important. And so you mentioned testing and stigma in the same statement, and that is so, so key that the stigma prevents people from going to a clinic just to get tested.
Yeah, you would think about what a different landscape we might have if it were as common as getting the flu shot.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I think that's part of the work that organizations like NCAN is doing here with HIV Speaks on Jones Street, and the work that we do at Southern AIDS Coalition, is that we are working very, very hard to normalize. And when I say normalize, I'm not saying that we should be passive about it or that it's not a big deal, but we have to normalize it as diabetes and as all of these other tests that we have and health disparities that we have. Then we have to bring this right into that grouping so that we can stop the stigma, increase testing, and eliminate the epidemic.
You know, that's a perfect segue. You know, it wasn't that long ago that the late Senator Jesse Helms had sought to block AIDS relief bills. This was in the 1980s, for our listeners, telling senators that the government had no business spending money in this area. Your organization, of course, was recently lobbying the General Assembly. Are they more receptive now to talking and learning about AIDS and HIV and the work that we need to do to make it preventable?
We definitely have had conversations with legislators on both sides of the aisle, and the response has been very receptive. And I am fully aware that in the 80s, the epidemic was definitely a different place, and there was definitely a different heightened sense of stigma, I guess to say, during that time that isn't as prevalent now. I think legislators and the public know that it's in the general public and the state's interest to ensure that all people living in this state are at optimum health, and that's including people living with HIV. And I think legislators are also able to know that if people who are living with HIV are not in treatment, that impacts the general public. If people are not tested and are unaware of their status, that impacts the general public. And, you know, any way you look at it, whether it be from a health standpoint or a financial standpoint, any way you look at it, it is in the state's best interest to prioritize this issue. And legislators have been receptive to that.
That's tremendous. This, of course, is a big budget year. They're writing the biennium budget. And I'm going to give you a little bit of power. I'm going to make you an appropriations chair. Where would you like to see healthcare dollars go? Of course, everybody's talking about Medicaid expansion this year and what a big difference that would make to people in our state. But where would you like to see North Carolina's healthcare dollars go?
Definitely, for sure, we would love to see Medicaid expanded in the state. That would not only impact the general public, but specifically, for sure, people living with HIV. Medicaid's the number one insurer of people living with HIV in the country. So to be able to have some of the money that we have invested through our tax dollars to come back to our state and actually impact the health of people living here would be beneficial. When it comes to the state-specific budget and appropriations, we would love to see definitely an increase of where we've been. 900,000 may seem like a great number, but that money can actually help people get tested, become aware of their status, be able to get into treatment, get linked to care. They can also help with different psychosocial supports that could impact people living with HIV, people who are vulnerable to HIV. But I think being able to not only provide access generally, but specifically in areas of the state where access to an HIV provider is not the issue, it's just having access to a general provider. There are some parts of the state where, you know, having access to healthcare generally is a problem. So being able to have resources allocated to be able to find those unique entry points for people to get tested, not only for HIV, but also for Hep C. There's also a lot of comorbidities with that. But being able to be creative and stretch the dollars to be able to go into those unique entry points, I think would be the best use of the state's money.
And you talked a little bit about PrEP a moment ago. Can you expand on that, how important it is for funding in that area in North Carolina as well as in the South?
At this point, you know, Charlotte, where I'm personally based, has the highest HIV transmission rates in the state. And Charlotte and Greensboro both are in the top 25 for new HIV transmissions in the country. So we are definitely at a time where we need to use all of the tools at our disposal. And in addition to, you know, knowing your status and being tested and being on medication, we also do have PrEP, which is a pill that you can take to prevent getting HIV. And being able to have a tool like that to, at the onset, prevent HIV from even occurring will not only save money, but will improve the health for people in our state. It's a wise decision. It's a smart decision that we should take advantage of what we know. Even though we don't technically have a cure yet, we have something that could effectively do that.
Where do you hope we're going to be in 5 years, Marvin?
I am confident that in 5 years, if we continue down the path where we are with bringing to the forefront the scientific medical improvements that we have in regards to HIV and AIDS and the prevention and the treatment processes, we will move the pendulum forward in a positive way. Secondly, as Christine was mentioning earlier, I think that it's very important, and we were having this conversation yesterday, that as we move forward with our legislators and with our lawmakers and with our policymakers, we have to have an approach that is impactful and that is positive, meaning such as Southern AIDS Coalition, we are a nonpartisan organization. And so we have to make sure that if we are trying to move forward and move the needle in a favorable direction with decreasing the diagnosis and ending the epidemic, then we have to have a different approach. And so I think if we couple treatment, policy, how we approach it, I think if we put all those things together, I think we would see advancement in a good direction for our communities and individuals that are affected and not affected by HIV.
We want to thank Christina Adeleke with the North Carolina AIDS Action Network and Marvin Anderson of the Southern AIDS Coalition for being with us this morning.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, one of North Carolina's top political scientists takes his first look at the 2020 election and some of our state's most contentious policy debates. Stay with us.